And we're going to go on to case number 3, 081583 and 082493, Daniel Waters versus the City of Chicago. We'll just wait till the courtroom is cleared. Good morning, Ms. Layton.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honors, the city is entitled to judgment as a matter of law in this Section 1983 case for two reasons I would like to discuss this morning. First, Commissioner Rice is not a municipal policymaker, and Mr. Waters therefore has not identified any official whose actions can subject the city to liability. Second, even if she were a municipal policymaker, Mr. Waters presented no evidence that she harbored an unconstitutional motive for terminating him.
Now, Ms. Layton, I want to ask you something at the very start about Judge Shader's analysis on the Monell issue. I've read through all of the various remarks and rulings that you collected in that separate appendix. Beyond what is in your appendix, is there anywhere else that Judge Shader addressed Commissioner Rice's policymaking authority?
Not to my knowledge. I tried to be comprehensive in what I put into that appendix. With respect to our first submission, the Commissioner Rice is not a policymaker for the city. That, of course, is determined by looking at local law, and the official to identify is the one who speaks with final authority or the type of action that's alleged to have caused the injury. In this case, that is a termination, and so the official is the final authority for termination policy for the city. That official, under local law, is the Commissioner of Human Resources, not a department head like Commissioner Rice.
Did Rice make was it a recommendation, or did she make the termination decision?
Commissioner Rice made the decision. The recommendation was made by a non-policymaking employee, Mr. Caterbeck.
What did the commissioner have to do with this?
The commissioner was presented with, under city policy...
I want to make sure I say, who is above Rice?
Rice is the head of the Department of Transportation.
But who,
so
you said she's not a policymaker.
Correct.
Who is the policymaker that is her?
The policymaker is the head of a different city department, and that's the Department of Human Resources. Under the personnel rules, under the municipal code, the city council delegated to the head of the Human Resources Department the ability to promulgate personnel rules. Commissioner of Human Resources, in turn, promulgated the city's personnel rules, which include Rule 18. That rule is the city's termination policy. Now, all department heads are subject to that particular termination policy. It sets out 55 grounds for discipline. And it also sets out the procedures that are applicable to discipline.
Is it your position that Commissioner Rice could only fire Mr. Waters for one of the 55 reasons that are set forth in that personnel rule?
No. No, Your Honor. That's not our position.
That's not your position.
One of the
if she had the authority to discharge Mr. Waters on grounds not recognized by the Department of Human Resources, then didn't she have some amount of policymaking authority as to employment rules for her department?
No, Your Honor, because what authority she had was constrained by a policy that's already in existence. And what Propotnick and other Supreme Court cases direct us to look for is not the official who can make rules, but the official who speaks with the final authority in a particular area of the city's business. That official is the Commissioner of Human Resources. One of the items on that list of 55 is one of the grounds for discipline, I should say, is a violation of a departmental rule. So that policy expressly contemplates that department heads will be able to add to the list because they have specific subject matter areas. Each department covers a different area. So, of course, the Commissioner of Human Resources can't contemplate everything that will be important to a department head. But the only way what department heads write has any teeth to it is by plugging it back into a policy that they did not create. They are constrained by Rule 18. That was written by the department, by the Commissioner of Human Resources. They don't have the authority to contradict what's on Rule 18. At most, they can add, but they cannot craft anew. And
well,
that
the decision to charge Mr. Waters also had to go through the law department. Okay, so you have both the Commissioner of Transportation, Ms. Rice, and the law department signing off on this discharge, and the personnel board signing off on it. Why wouldn't it be consistent with Monell to attribute that discharge to the city?
Because there needed to be evidence that whoever was the policymaker holding the city liable, himself or herself, committed the violation that is charged. In this case, and that gets into our second point, even if this court believes that Commissioner Rice is in fact a policymaker, there is simply no evidence in this record that she committed the entire violation, because the violation is not just that she terminated him. The violation of the Constitution is that she terminated him for an illicit reason. And that is where Mr. Waters' evidence falls short. Yes, she terminated him. Yes, the Department of Law signed off. Yes, the Personnel Board upheld the appeal. But there is no evidence that any of those bodies or individuals did so for an unconstitutional reason, and it's only illegal if it were for an unconstitutional reason.
Well, is there any provision, in Chicago's municipal code or its personnel rules that prohibits the discharge of an employee because he exercised his First Amendment rights or blew the whistle on wrongdoing by the city?
Well, there's no express there's nothing that expressly states that department heads or whoever are not allowed to fire employees for unconstitutional reasons, except the Constitution itself.
Wait a minute. Your answer is no, right?
That there is nothing in those explicit terms. There is something about don't fire employees on grounds of race, on grounds of religion, on grounds such as that.
No, I'm asking you a very specific question about this very specific case. If there's no such provision, then doesn't that serve to distinguish a case like this from Moriyama, for example, where the employment decisions at issue were contrary to the city's express policy?
Well, it is a slightly different, you're right, Your Honor, it is slightly different than the situation in Moriyama, but we wouldn't hold that to be, we would submit that's not fatal to our position, because our position is that the particular individual who can hold the city liable, the policymaker, has to have committed the underlying offense with which she is charged. And the offense in this case is terminating somebody because of their First Amendment activity. And only if there is evidence that it was because of Mr. Waters' First Amendment activity can Mr. Waters state a claim against Commissioner Rice sufficient to hold the city liable.
Well, assuming we'll just say for hypothetical or actual, the policymaker, she approves of the subordinate's decision, and I guess the key language is and the basis for it. And the basis for this one goes back allegedly to Caterdeck, who was her subordinate, who had, we'll call it an ulterior motive, not relayed to Rice. I know Judge Shader kept saying, even if she's, clean as the driven snow or something like that?
Right.
That doesn't matter. That if the her subordinate, without her knowledge, had an ulterior motive, she's still responsible for it. That seems to be Judge Shader's position, and that's what you're objecting to.
Correct, Your Honor. It is our objection that one of the elements for the offense was imputed to the decision, to the policymaker, as but from a non-policymaking employee's actions. Mr. Caterbeck can't hold the city liable. Only Commissioner Rice's actions, if she were a policymaker, could.
Does this case serve to illustrate a shortcoming of the Monell framework to the extent that it insulates a municipality from liability even when the most senior officials are blatantly violating the constitutional rights of city employees?
No, Your Honor, because
it's sort of very Alice in Wonderland right here.
No, Your Honor, because it is still possible to show somebody who's at the head of the department was perhaps ignoring the repeated unconstitutional actions of a subordinate. As Poprotnick makes clear, it should not concern this court that there's no liability in one case, because if there is a practice that a policymaker is ignoring, then that would be sufficient to impute to the policymaker that she herself harbored that motive, that she herself was aware but was refusing to take action.
Well, we can always say the policymaker wasn't aware, or the policy it's a fabulous subterfuge, isn't it?
I disagree respectfully, Your Honor, because it's possible for an employee like Mr. Waters to show intent. He did so with respect to Mr. Caterbeck. Mr. Caterbeck's the head of the Bureau of Bridges. There's no he did it by showing that Mr. Caterbeck was involved and knew about the particular First Amendment activity.
But what does it matter? How can he ever show that she has the intent if she's not a policymaker?
Well, if Mr. Caterbeck is not a policy,
Miss Rice.
Okay. If Commissioner Rice is not the policymaker, then Mr. Waters has no claim against the city itself and no basis. Mr. Waters sued Mr. Caterbeck in this case. There was an appropriate defendant here. But just because
he should have sued Commissioner Rice, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying even if he had sued Commissioner Rice, she's not the policymaker who can subject the city to liability. But there was a defendant that he could have put on the hook for this.
So in other words, low-level employees can be sued, but the highest-level employees cannot be sued.
That's the basis of Monell. Monell says only the municipality or those whose actions speak for the municipality can you hold a city liable for.
Would it have been sued Caterbeck in his individual capacity some way?
In fact, Mr. Waters did sue Mr. Caterbeck. He voluntarily dismissed that defendant. I see I'm cutting my rebuttal time, and so I would respectfully request to reserve the remainder of
the
rebuttal.
Sure, and you might be getting some more time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Robinson.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Mary Robinson on behalf of Dan Waters. I think I would just like to say what I think we agree on before I get into what we disagree on. I don't think that there's any disagreement that the evidence here supports a finding that the basis for Dan Waters' termination was to retaliate against his exercise of First Amendment rights. That's certainly what motivated Stan Caterbeck. The evidence is really quite extreme in terms of what we would usually see. There were meetings. There were falsified reports. There were memos to and from about, fix this. This is going to come back to haunt us. It's a uniquely dramatic situation as far as that's concerned. So then the question is the city liable in that, number one, is Judith Rice a policymaker? And number two, was it appropriate for Judge Shader to invoke the conduit theory of liability that's used in Title VII cases in order to determine and to instruct the jury that it could hold the city liable if Judith Rice ratified a decision by a subordinate and her decision was substantially influenced, whether she knew it or not? Did she substantially rely?
Well, in reading through the various remarks that Judge Shader made about Monell, the most I saw him saying about Commissioner Rice's authority was that she was the final decision-maker as to Mr. Waters' discharge, but did he ever make a finding as to her authority in terms of making employment policy? I could not find that.
Your Honor, my recollection is that he did say that she was a policymaker. In the published decision on the denial of summary judgment, and he did so by saying a municipality like a city council, because in the trial proceedings here, the city was pretty rigid about arguing that only the city council had authority to make policy, and that's how they asked Judge Shader to instruct the jury. But Judge Shader said that authority can be delegated. And I don't know, I know he did not say it was delegated in this case under the rule that we cite, under the personnel rule. He did not say that. But he did say authority can be delegated, and he believed that the city of Chicago had delegated authority to department heads.
Well, how do you get around cases like Oriema, which really do draw a clear distinction between a city executive's authority to make hiring and firing decisions and the authority to make policy which governs those decisions?
The first reason, and I think the most dramatic, is that there is a rule adopted by someone, enacted by the Commissioner of the Department of Human Resources, which the city acknowledges is who the city acknowledges is a policymaker. That rule delegates to department heads the authority to develop work rules. And the phrase work rules is used in one place, one other place, other than the rule I'm talking about. The one other place where that phrase is used is the 55 item listing of what conduct, you know, can get a lawyer, I mean, a
employee.
Sorry about that. Can get a an employee in disciplinary trouble.
Look, now, I know that you rely on the authority of the department heads to make work rules, but what support is there for the notion that such authority is equivalent to the Department of Human Resources authority to make employment policy for the city?
I don't think that the law requires that there be equal authority. I think that, for instance, I think in the Zook case, which we cite, I'm going to be a little confused, but I do recall that there was a perhaps a merit commission or somebody that had employment authority, and it had delegated to the sheriff authority to make additional employment policy. And the court then said that a decision by the sheriff, that sheriff was a policymaker. And so I don't think that there is the same, I mean, I was thinking about, I don't recall the cases where we talk about legislation occupying the field. I've not seen that show up in any Monell analysis. Just because there is some other entity that has authority to make employment policy does not mean that that entity cannot delegate further authority. And so I would say, no, there is not. I don't think that under the structure of the city of Chicago, the department heads have authority to make employment policy in defiance of or inconsistent with what the Department of Human Resources has decreed.
And I have had just a terrible time with Oriema because, I mean, put simply, I guess, only if the official had the authority to make employment policy for the city, can his decision render the city liable if his authority is limited to implementing employment policy established by others, then his decision, according to Oriema,
Your Honor,
can't expose the city to liability, even if, and especially if, it would seem, if it was a violation of the city's policy. You know, Oriema says liability for unauthorized acts is personal to hold the municipality liable, Monell tells us the agent's actions must implement rather than frustrate the government's policy. And I am just desperately trying to get my head around that, because I don't like the idea of insulation.
I have offered a simplistic way around it, and that is by relying on the work rule delegation. And that does not apply to the chief of police. The chief of police is not a department head. And the employment policies that govern the police department are different than those that govern in the case of other city departments. So that is a major difference between this case and Oriema. I also would say that Oriema might have overstated some things inconsistently with some other decisions of this court. Oriema took the position that executives are not policymakers. In Cornfield, this court said just the opposite. Executives are, and often are, especially in municipal, all the different brands of municipal governance, executives frequently are policymakers. And I think it's worth going back to what Monell was about. Monell said that Congress did not intend to make municipalities liable for what they cannot control. Either they don't have authority. I mean, that's really what the focus of the congressional debates. Many municipalities didn't even have police authority. They couldn't control riots, and that was what the topic that was discussed over and over in the congressional debates that were quoted in Monell. They don't even have authority. How can we ask them to be liable for something they cannot control? And then Monell goes even further and says, we'll only hold them liable for what they can control and choose to control. And I think that in the structure of this case and the circumstances here, the city of Chicago has chosen to control this decision in an official way. It delegated employment policy making authority to its department heads. It made those heads responsible for making final termination decisions, recognizing that's not the same as a policymaker, but certainly Judith Rice had the authority to make that final decision. And she retained, and then I'd ask the court to remember, in Paprotnick, the court told us that under Monell, a municipality can be liable where a policymaker ratifies the illegal conduct of a subordinate.
But that's what, you have to ratify it. You have to affirm it on the same basis that he will call it with his bad motive. And Judge Shader seems to discard that, says it doesn't matter. She can be as clean as the driven snow, he said. And she really doesn't have to know the basis for Kaderbeck's bad motive.
Right. I don't, first of all, that phrase and the basis for it is in the dicta in Paprotnick. As it turns out, the court decided...
It's certainly imprinted on a lot of cases.
Exactly. Right. But the court didn't apply it there and, in fact, said there are fine points that need to be developed and we're not going to do it here because the person who made the decision, the person who ratified was not a policymaker. And so it didn't even have to decide what basis that person looked at in making the decision in Paprotnick. And that's true of many cases.
But if you don't require that the basis be affirmed or ratified, we're right back at respondeat superior, aren't we?
I think that what is worth noting is when we look at Owen, you know, Owen told us, and Paprotnick told us, that when a municipality retains the authority in a policymaker to review the decisions of a subordinate, the actual ability and authority and does so, then it's fair to hold the municipality liable. Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense to say that the municipality can do that, and as long as the policymaker doesn't pay too much attention to what was really going on, you know, as long as the policymaker just got something that they could take and walk away with, that the municipality shouldn't be liable. The fact is that the control has been maintained. The municipality has the ability to control this and look at it. And I want to mention a few factors. Here, this isn't a case where...
Well, wouldn't you have to show a pattern of that, though, ignoring the underlying reasons that
That would be a different basis for liability. But I also want to address the fact that there were a number of things on the face of it that the jury here could have found that Judith Rice had to know. I mean, on the face of it, there was evidence that violence in the workplace rules were never applied in verbal altercations among laborers. And there was no dispute that that was true. This was way out of sorts with what was usually happening. There was documentation sent to Commissioner Rice by Stan Caterbeck and then withdrawn by him, a premature recommendation for termination, where there had been no hearings, I mean, where it was very clear on the face of it that there had not been, that procedures hadn't been followed. Commissioner Rice's personnel coordinator, someone O'Malley, testified that he had, and there were a number of emails that he sent out to Caterbeck and said, get that memo back. Some of what you're saying is going to come back to haunt us. And he told him that he was being premature. And that he wasn't following policy, and that he had even misstated policy. And all of that was available to Commissioner Rice in terms of reviewing this. She would not have had to scratch very far below the surface if she wanted to look at all. As a policymaker, she had the ability to do that, the control, the authority. Everything that Monell tells us we want the municipality to have agreed to do before we will hold the municipality liable. And it seems to me here that everything holding the city of Chicago liable in this case is hardly a challenge to the theory that that we shouldn't be holding cities liable for what they cannot control. They chose to control this in this case and gave Rice authority to control it, and she had the capacity to see what was going on. Plus, it was very clear the jury also could have paid attention to the fact that it was widely known within the department, widely known that Dan Waters had John Cass at the work site. This was the subject of great gossip, and it was widely known that he would pay a price for that. And I also want to say, in terms of the whole other theory that could have been pursued on custom, Judge Shader cut that off pretty early in this case. He disallowed a request by the plaintiff to depose the Noel Brennan, the Shackman administrator, to investigate whether or not he'd be able to prove custom, you know, go looking for evidence. Judge Shader allowed the city's motion in limine to preclude evidence that Dan Waters himself had been the subject of other custom in the Department of in the city. He had lost another job based on political retaliation and got a job back as a settlement of a case of painters against the city who had lost their jobs for political reasons. And so the case didn't get to the jury in that way at all. Judge Shader took it down the conduit theory. The Judith Rice is a policymaker, and she relied substantially on clearly retaliatory, a recommendation that was clearly based on a retaliatory motive.
Is there anything more you want to add? Because
I just wanted to add that if we look at what the conduit cases talk about, one of the things that they make clear is that an employer is not going to be held liable if the employer can break the link. Okay, if the employer can establish that the employer conducted an independent inquiry and had a basis other than the retaliatory or other unconstitutional motive. And it seems to me to be perfectly consistent with Monell to have that be a basis for determining whether or not a municipality is liable, because the municipality, as I said before, has retained under Poprotniks, they've retained the ability and authority in the policymaker to review the decision of the underling, of the subordinate. And they can avoid cat's paw or conduit liability if they do review it, if they actually do review it and have an independent basis. And it seems to me that that's entirely consistent with what Monell is telling us to pay attention to. So I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Robinson. Now, Ms. Slayton has... Okay. I think you better add 2 more minutes. I think that's about what we gave Ms. Robinson. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points. First of all, with respect to Commissioner Rice being a policymaker, I would direct the court to Proprotnick and not just to Oriema, because Proprotnick requires that the policymaker have the final authority, and a policymaker is not someone who is constrained by policies he or she did not create. And so the idea of sharing power among policymakers doesn't make any sense. You can't share, when you're looking for a policymaker, you're looking for this person that speaks with the final authority and is not constrained by policies she didn't create. Commissioner Rice is constrained by Personnel Rule 18. At most, whatever work rules she writes get added onto a list that already exists and get plugged in for their enforcement to that policy. So the Commissioner of Human Resources has final authority. Commissioner Rice is not a policymaker. I just wanted also to correct the misimpression. The superintendent of police, the police is in fact the head of the Department of Police. So counsel was distinguishing Oriema on that basis. That's an incorrect basis in which to distinguish the case. Second of all, even if this court believes that Commissioner Rice is a municipal policymaker, Mr. Waters needed to show she herself was responsible for the underlying constitutional violation. And it doesn't offend, it's not, Monell requires a policymaker. It's not a shortcoming with Monell that only a policymaker can subject the city to liability. In fact, it's the holding of Monell and the cases that follow it make it quite clear. There needs to be evidence that the policymaker did it before the city can be on the hook. And there is no evidence here that Commissioner Rice did it in the sense that she had the unconstitutional motive. Perhaps, as Judge Tinder pointed out, if she had there was a pattern and she stuck her head in the sand, then it could be then you could say that she in fact did it. But there is no evidence here that she knew of Mr. Waters' First Amendment activity. And counsel points to the fact that there was some suspicious nature of the documents that were submitted to Commissioner Rice. There's simply nothing on the face of that that said that gave anything indication to Commissioner Rice that she should have been put on notice that the reason Mr. Kaderbeck was making the recommendation he did was because of Mr. Waters' First Amendment activity. All the evidence presented pertained to Mr. Kaderbeck and his Bureau of Bridges. No evidence linked Commissioner Rice to the day-to-day workings there. She simply wasn't part of that. There's nothing, no evidence linking that. It was all limited to Mr. Kaderbeck.
What's all this widely known allegation that, gee, everybody knew that Waters was going to, I guess, pay or something?
Well, that was all widely known in Mr. Kaderbeck's bureau. But Commissioner Rice is the head of the Department of Transportation. There was no evidence that she ran the Department of Transportation the way Mr. Kaderbeck ran the Bureau of Bridges. All the evidence in the case went to how he ran his bureau, not to whether Commissioner Rice was present in the bureau on a day-to-day basis, what she knew, what communications Mr. Waters had with her. It was all about Mr. Kaderbeck's bureau. Nothing tied Commissioner Rice to anything that should have put her on notice.
Didn't those instructions indicate that it didn't matter what she knew as long as she affirmed what her underling did?
And that's correct, Your Honor. And that was actually my third point. Even if there were evidence tying Commissioner Rice to a constitutional violation, there still should be a new trial in this case because the jury instructions allow the jury to find either on a permissible basis, Commissioner Rice, or on an impermissible basis, which is the conduit theory, the district court imputing the motive to her. So even if she herself could be said to violate the Constitution, the instructions did not limit the jury's ability to find to that particular theory. And this court has held where instructions present that problem, there is prejudice to the objecting party that warrants a new trial. So finally, the last point I wanted to make is if this court is inclined to consider the custom and practice argument that was alluded to here that wasn't in the brief, and we would just request the opportunity to respond to that in writing. So for unless there are any further questions, for these reasons, we respectfully request that this court reverse the judgments of the district court and order the court to enter judgment in favor of the city or conduct a new trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Robinson. Thank you, Ms. Layton.